It is the Doomsday Podcast, and Edward or Matt Mosley, as always, in another another loss for the Cowboys. And honestly, Ed, we'll break it all down. We'll hear from Stretch, but I think when you think about things, and Ed's in Seattle, by the way, and has hustled back over from his perch after the game to be ready to do this podcast. This team could so easily be 0-3 right now. I mean, it's fortunate to be 1-2. Although obviously there were some things that happened today to lead you to believe they could have ended up 2-1. But I think Ed, I just kind of want to get your gut feeling after the game. Is there anything? I mean, I just don't see help on the way on any of this stuff on the defense, and it really right now, I mean, this does not look anything like a playoff team other than the fact they play in a horrific division.
Right. I mean, my first takeaway was, you know, Dak Prescott is a quarterback who's always been defined by wins and not statistics, and now he's a quarterback being defined by statistics and not wins because his team isn't winning. I mean, he threw for a career-high 472 yards, became the first Cowboys quarterback with consecutive 400-yard passing games. The Cowboys had 500 yards in consecutive games for the first time in their history, and they're lucky to have a single win this early in the season. I mean, it took a historic comeback, and they almost had another one today. So, I think the defense is obviously a big concern, but, you know, I think Mike McCarthy took that into account when he talked about, you know, how he wanted to play this game. And he made it very clear that he was willing to engage Russell Wilson and the Seahawks in a scoring contest. He thought Seattle's defense was that bad. And you know what? They are. They are that bad. They've given up more yards in three games than any team in history. And they're 3-0 because Russell Wilson's that good. Well, Dak Prescott is not Russell Wilson. And they wanted to play wide open, and McCarthy said during the week he felt like they could take that approach because he has a quarterback in Prescott who protects the football. He doesn't turn it over. That's his nature. He went into this game with the longest streak in franchise history, not turning the ball over. Well, he turned the ball over three times today. Was it always his fault? No, but it's always his responsibility. And he had two interceptions and a fumble, and that's ultimately what the difference in this game was. The turnovers. And if you look at it, the Cowboys are -4 in turnover ratio. Only four teams are worse, and none of those teams has won a single game. Houston, the Giants, the Vikings, and the Eagles. Two games, they've got one takeaway. The defense, we've seen, creates no short fields for their amount of offense, again. And only Houston and Minnesota have no takeaways. So the offense turns the ball over and puts the defense in bad situations, and the defense doesn't take the ball away and create some scoring opportunities for the offense. That's the problem.
Yeah, it's a huge problem. And the Cowboys lose this one 38-31. They were driving with a chance to tie or go for the win late in the ball game. And you know, there's a ton of excitement. These two quarterbacks, Ed, it was sort of billed as, oh, you know, Dak's got to win these kind of games and all. And I think some people got their feelings hurt and thought, oh, he's won big games and that kind of thing. I mean, I think the point is you got to do this like on a consistent basis if you want to be considered truly one of the best. But I think you make a good point right off the top. These numbers, they can be staggering. And maybe at the end of the season, it'll look unbelievable. And maybe they'll be the number one passing team in the league. Right now, they were like the number two or three overall offense because the passing yards are so. But let me dial in on one thing. One thing that you talked about with McCarthy, and we knew a criticism of him in the past is that he put so much on Rodgers. He didn't use the running game. Maybe he didn't have a back he was comfortable with. And lo and behold, today, 57 passing attempts. I mean, they're basically asking the guy to do those things that Aaron Rodgers was asked to do for so many years. And so, and Dak and Zeke had 14 carries. Ed, this whole thing, we used to talk about how everything had been designed around Zeke Elliott. Now it's like Zeke's almost seems to be more valuable as a pass receiver than a running back, and that's a strange, strange place to be. And, oh, by the way, he's dropping passes as a pass receiver.
His greatest value today was as a blitz pickup guy behind a horrible offensive line, which obviously there are explanations for that. They, you know, Travis Frederick retired. Now they don't have Lael Collins at right tackle. I haven't had him to this point. He's eligible to come back next week. Whether he does or not remains to be seen. You know, and Tyron Smith off for his second consecutive game as an inactive with his neck problem. So if you want to talk about reasons for optimism, to me, that's it. You know, your next three games are at home, and you've got the potential of having both of your offensive tackles back. Now, the Zeke role is interesting because he's played more snaps the first three games of the season for McCarthy than he ever did for Garrett. So he's on the field. Quite honestly, the Seahawks have played the run well, or maybe they played the pass so poorly nobody tries to run on them. That's certainly possible. But I think McCarthy came into the game saying, we're not going to run the football. We're not going to try and hold the score down. You know, that's not the way we can win this game. He didn't. In other words, he trusted his quarterback and he didn't trust his defense. Is this equation going to work? I don't know. I think part of the reason they played the way they did today, while McCarthy announced that's the way he intended to play, is, again, they're facing a double-digit deficit. And just like they did so many times last year, just like they did last week, when that happens, you're going to have to throw the football. And scoring 30 points is going to be necessary to win in the NFL right now, because I think I just checked, and going into the Sunday night Packers-Saints game, all but three of the teams that won today scored 30 points doing so. So that's just the way the NFL is. And now the defense, I don't know what they're going to do about that. They've allowed 38 or more points in consecutive games for the first time since 1988. Let me remind you, that was Tom Landry's last year as a Cowboys coach. So at no point during all the subsequent coaches they've had, from Tom Landry to right now Mike McCarthy, had they ever given up 38 points in consecutive games. Not just early in the season, in consecutive games. So the defense is horrifically bad. But again, I think both last week and this week, offensive turnovers and failed special teams plays contributed to those situations. So a lot of it's on the defense. The defense still isn't doing anything to create plays that win games. And let's be honest, if Trayvon Diggs doesn't continue to hustle or refuse to give up and punch the ball out on DK Metcalf when he began to Leon let it at the end there, I mean, Russell Wilson's throwing for 450 yards and six touchdowns against this team.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up. Should have been six touchdowns, and that was a great play. Although he was beat on the play, he didn't give up on it. It's a good example on all levels of football. Ed, and we'll have Stretch on a little bit later to hand out his grades, and I think things will be harsh in a lot of areas. But that's got to be – I think that's disconcerting for fans and everybody. You know, it's one thing to get beat by a great quarterback. Okay, it's going to happen.
Which they did. They did.
Russell
they
Wilson.
Beat by a great quarterback.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But what I'm saying is it's another to just be completely baffled at all times. And, you know, one thing that stands out in my mind today is, like, anything that was around the goal line. That one time it looked like they were going to break up a two-point attempt toward the end of the game. It was like – that was, like, shocking. Oh, my gosh. They didn't get it. Well, obviously, roughing the passer was called, and they got another shot, and they got it. Ed, no matter what it, whether they're using misdirection, no matter like on the throw to Lockett, on the first touchdown, Cowboys have a 3-0 lead. The throw to Lockett, when you look at that replay, like there's no like, oh man, they got him on the motion, they got him on the waggle, they got him on something else.
Literally, he just ran right by Xavier Woods.
Woods is like kind of edging up, and then boom, the guy's by him. And I was trying to watch after to see, okay, it's always interesting to see who the coaches get on to or who, and Diggs was involved in that too. But the bottom line is you have a guy who's a deep threat. You've got one of the great long ball throwers in the game? What are your safeties for? You know, if they're not for keeping,
and they're just playing zone. They're playing zone, and to me, the thing that's most disturbing about the defensive performance today, and again, they're playing against a great quarterback. He's unique in everything he can do. All the second chance, third chance plays that he creates, his accuracy with the deep throw is I think the best in the league in a long time. But to me, the thing that is the worst about this defensive performance is, you know, with all these coverage breakdowns, keep in mind that McCarthy had Mike Nolan condense the game plan to reduce mental mistakes. So what they did today comes with, this is what we can do when we cut down on our playbook and the players know what they're doing. Like, imagine the confusion and the mistakes we would have if I allowed, you know, Mike Nolan to have the full playbook like he wants. Now, and I know we're going to criticize Mike Nolan, and he has to expect it. You know, he's coached in the league for 32 years. And when I talked to him before the game, he told me that he's never seen a quarterback play going into this game like Russell Wilson's been playing. So that's the task that was before them. But, you know, I've got to say, you know, a part of this has to be, because if you look around the league, there's so many points being scored. I think a part of it has to be that there's no fans in the stands, first of all. That's why we're having all these historic comebacks. I mean, what the Cowboys did today, when they're down 15, they're done. If Seattle's crowd's in the game, you know, creating noise and penalties and everything else, making a comeback all that much more difficult. So I think the absence of crowds has a lot to do with what we're seeing. And the other thing is, you know, in Mike Nolan's defense, you know, he didn't have an offseason to implement his plan. And he took over a defense with, what, five new starters, and now he's lost guys to injuries, including two corners, his best linebacker. And so they're playing shorthanded, and they haven't had really a lot of reps to get ready. They didn't get the preseason games. They didn't get the offseason, you know, mini camps to get this stuff down. So I think all of those things are part of the reason so many points are being scored and very few defenses are playing effectively.
I agree with that. I find it very strange that on a day, Ed, at the same time, we're asking all these questions. How are you letting these guys run free? And even Mike McCarthy said, hey, that's, you know, that's not supposed to be happening.
That's what Mondays are for, he said.
Yeah,
to correct these mistakes.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm just – it's amazing that that kind of day happened on a day when part of the storyline, especially in the first half, was all this stuff about look how much pressure they're getting on Russell Wilson, Alden Smith, three sacks, knockdowns, pressures. Part of the stats on the TV package, they're like, oh, man, he's dropped back 30 times, and he's been under pressure, I don't know, whatever it was. And so they're kind of making a big deal out of how much pressure he's under. The problem was, on what should have been six touchdowns, he had guys running free. So it almost sort of – I mean, to your point earlier, imagine if they didn't have pressure on those plays. What would it have been? Would it have been?
Well, I didn't ever get the sense that, you know, Russell Wilson was under constant pressure in the game. I think there were a few times where, you know, they had good enough coverage that he had to hold the ball, which is part of his game.
Which is shocking.
And they got a sack. You know, Mike McCarthy, you know, one of the things he talked about during the week was, you know, we've got to win the play when it takes longer than 2.3 seconds, which is how long it usually takes for a quarterback to get the ball out of his hands on average, 2.3 seconds. He said that was a big point of emphasis for them because, you know, when you talk to defensive coordinators around the league about the Seahawks and the way they play, you know, the Seahawks with Russell Wilson have the best off-schedule offense in the entire NFL. And I talked to Pete Carroll about that before the game, and he said it's a major part of what we do. We work really hard to make it the best in the league, and there are a lot of examples of, you know, Russell's work out of the pocket. I mean, that's our offense. And so a lot of times Russell Wilson makes a play on the field that's much better than the one that's called to him in the huddle. You know, he gets to the top of his drop, and he instinctively starts looking to relocate, and his deep ball accuracy, as we've seen, is completely off the charts. So I never got the sense that the Cowboys had by any measure any control of Russell Wilson with their pass rush. I think there were a few times where the coverage was good enough that, you know, the play would last long enough that finally somebody would get there. But I don't think they were creating any pressure on Wilson and forcing him out of the pocket. I think they did a good job keeping him in the pocket, actually. But, you know, that just allows him time for somebody to eventually come free and find him, and he does that typically.
Yeah, and he hurt him in some big spots with his legs in the second half. One time, I think when Jalen Smith was supposed to be spying him, if you give him too much room, he's going to run out there and get some easy first downs on you. And, again, that makes us think sometimes, well, why doesn't – I think it's funny, anytime he and Russell are playing in a game against each other, or maybe even when they're not against each other, Cowboys fans are wondering, why can't Dak be more like Russell? And the truth is, he's very Russell-like in a ton of his numbers. But to your point, you know, you can't create what happened at the end of the half. You can't throw a ball that far behind a receiver. I mean, that is, I know everybody's going, oh, he had this long streak. You talked about it too. But that's what Parcells would call an indiscriminate throw. I mean, it was way behind. It was way behind the receiver, and it was an easy pick.
And it was so ill-timed. It was
horribly.
So ill-timed. I mean,
yes.
In your own end. And actually, I think he had Amari Cooper open on an in-breaking route when he made his cut, but he was late with the ball and slightly behind him, and it gets undercut, picked off, and that sets up a touchdown. And then they come out of the half, and what, on the third play, he gets hit and kind of fumbles,
yes.
and they catch it. And so, you know, that's too many easy scores for Seattle in actually situations where the Cowboys were hoping to score. You know, Mike likes that scoring. He always defers because he wants to score at the end of the first half and get the ball to start the third and double dip. Belichick does that all the time, has made a big thing out of that. And they actually failed to do that. So they got scored on twice in those situations.
Yeah, and I will say on the play you just mentioned, I for some reason people are like a little bit – you and I love – Dak, I mean, my gosh, we've been very defensive of him at times over the years. I mean, we admire his work, but I mean, this whole thought, well, that wasn't Dak's fault. That wasn't Dak's fault. I mean, it's like no other quarterback. I mean, think about that over the years, the great ones, nobody says, oh, just none of that was his fault. I think you put it nicely. You said, or put it well, you said it's their responsibility. If you try to double pump, and you know you're behind a horrible offensive line, and you're standing in the pocket, and you double pump, you know that could happen. That's on him. I mean, would you have liked to have seen more time? Would you like to see better protection? But, again, he's got a guy that's an all-pro guard playing right tackle. He's got a guy playing left tackle that shouldn't have to be out there, a backup left tackle. So I'm a little tired of all this. None of that was Dak's fault. I mean, he's the quarterback. He's a big enough guy to take all this criticism.
And he will. He'll take the criticism, and he recognizes he can't turn the ball over. And, you know, Dak plays on a very fine edge with this team. They're just not that good. And I think that's reflected in the fact that when he throws even one interception, one time in a game, they're 8-17. If he's intercepted one time or more, he's 8-17. So he almost has to play perfect football in terms of protecting the ball, or the Cowboys are going to lose. That's the edge that he has to play with, that I think a few other quarterbacks have to be that perfect if they're going to win the game. And Russell Wilson's probably another one, but that's a pretty fine line when you're 8-17 if you have only one interception in a game.
Although Russell has had, he remembers a time when he had great defenses, and then that all worked together.
I mean, it's evolved to where it is now. They had great defenses, and they won with that, a running game, and then they were kind of an average defense, and they, you know, worked a little more Russell's way, but they were still a physical run-first team, control the score. And now it's, hey, Russell, You know, you got a defense that's given up the third most points in three games in the history of the league to start a season. You've got a defense that's given up more yards in three games than any team in history. But you're good enough to make us undefeated because you're a wizard. Go do it. And he does it. He's capable of it. Dak at this point is not capable of that on a consistent basis. And that's what it's all about. It's about winning on a consistent basis. And, I mean, he almost engineered another great comeback. He had a shot. And, you know, you mentioned the offensive line. And I think you got to give Mike McCarthy some credit, or Kellen Moore some credit, for making that change in the game. I mean, Zach Martin, everybody's talked about Zach Martin being able to play tackle and guard ever since he came to Dallas 7 years ago. And this is the first time he actually did it. Mm-hmm. And it was in the middle of a game, you know. And so for them to reconfigure three positions – you got to give McCarthy credit for that. I mean, they started an undrafted rookie at right tackle, Terrence Steele, now for 3 weeks. And finally they decided that it wasn't in their best interest to play him there. And they moved Joe Looney from center to right guard. They moved Zach Martin from right guard to right tackle. And they brought in Tyler Biadasz, the rookie from Wisconsin, to play center. And I think he was making the calls. So it'll be interesting to see how they line up next week, assuming that they have one or both of their tackles back.
All right. The Doomsday Podcast rolls on. Ed, let's talk about personnel for a little bit. And, you know, obviously Will McClay at times has received a lot of praise for some of his draft picks and that type of thing, and some of the people he's been able to bring in. But I think right now you mentioned the play Xavier Woods seemingly let Lockett behind him. They're trying to play with another player that just is not a real experienced type player.
Darian Thompson.
Darian Thompson. And I think Jerry, Steven, Will McClay, whoever. You go into a season, the philosophy of this organization to not really spend premium draft picks on safety, not to pay that position. I know you can't blow out every position, but letting Jeff Heath walk, and I know he was much maligned in some circles, but Ed, you're sitting there right now at a time when it seems like safety play, given what all's going on in the NFL and the high scoring, would be more valuable than ever, and you've put yourself in a hugely vulnerable position. So I guess what I'm saying is we can call out the players all day long, and I think that's appropriate. But the people who actually put the roster together, I think at least early in this season, are looking pretty bad, specifically in those positions.
Well, this was an interesting game. For that very point, right? I'm not sure anybody has devoted fewer resources to the safety position than the Cowboys. I don't think they've drafted a player at safety in the top three rounds since 2013. And yet the Seattle Seahawks have spent probably the most resources on the safety position. They traded for Quandre Diggs with Minnesota or Detroit last year, And they gave up two first-round picks and more for Jamal Adams, who the Cowboys wanted to trade for at the deadline last year, but didn't want to give the Jets all they wanted. The Seahawks did because they thought he was a uniquely dynamic player at the safety position. And quite honestly, he didn't have the impact on this game that I thought he might, given how motivated he was, for all of those reasons. But yeah, the Cowboys have not put a lot of resources into the safety position, and it certainly looks like that in the way they're playing. And I guess you can hope that your pass rush is good enough. You know, hey, Aldon Smith, DeMarcus Lawrence, and Everson Griffin. I mean, that sounds pretty formidable, right? But only one guy is getting any sacks. Aldon Smith. Aldon Smith had three sacks today. A guy who hadn't played since 2015 has four sacks, and nobody else has more than one.
Oh, you're saying there's not a lot of stories in the league where a guy's been out for 4 years and comes back in, gets three sacks?
It's highly unusual. And then on top of that, so you're not getting the pressure up front that you expected from some of those guys. And then, You know, you've lost two corners to IR. Chido Uzier's got to miss two more games before he can come back. And Anthony Brown's got to miss at least one more before he comes back. So if you're hoping that the pass rush and the corners can prevent you from being exposed at safety, well, that hasn't happened because some of your defensive linemen haven't met your expectations and you've lost a couple of your key corners to IR temporarily.
Ed, I need to ask you a question real quick. Do you know, like, what kind of beer that Mike McCarthy could use right now if he was gonna have a beer after this game, a beer that for all these years has been such a part of the Cowboys family? What beer do you think Mike McCarthy would like to toss back?
Well, you know, Mike McCarthy back in his older days when he was in Green Bay might have had an Old Milwaukee, but I'm going to guess that that's not where he goes now. Now he's a Miller Lite man, would be my guess.
You're absolutely right. And, Ed, when we're finished here, I want you to find some friends, and I want you to share a Miller Lite. You're staying in a different hotel than usual. Ed, do you have any friends in this hotel?
Oh, all my friends are at the Waterfront Marriott where we always stay, but I found out they have no food, including room service. And so I moved to a different property, a different chain, gave up my Marriott points because I want some calories. I value calories, especially empty calories, over Marriott points, it turns out. So I moved to a hotel that has a steakhouse in it that's open and has limited in-room dining. So I will take you up on your offer and go put a Miller Lite on your tab.
Oh, that is great. Save the calories. Cheers to the only beer the Cowboys celebrating 60 years of greatness. Here's to the original light beer. It's Miller time. And during the 2020 season, Miller Lite celebrating 60 years of Cowboys greatness. Pick up special mark packaging, the Cowboys 60th anniversary imagery and logo at participating retailers. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 96 calories, 3.2 carbs per 12 ounces. I'm sure Mike McCarthy had a Miller Lite at one point at the Wooden Nickel in Appleton, Wisconsin, where we spent a long, interesting November evening one time, and Todd Haley, all the Cowboys coaches, came to join us. Ed, you may have been in there. I think George Reba was in there, and I learned a lesson. Don't ever try to stay up with George Reba, a man who runs a lot of marathons. Okay, now, Ed, we're being joined by a man named Glenn Stretch Smith. It is time for his stretch plays, and I think, Ed,
from a stretch marks.
Well, I go back and forth. Oh, stretch marks. We can go with stretch marks, and Stretch, it's always good to see you via Zoom, kind of looking – peering down over the glasses, getting ready to pass out your grades. Ed, why don't you start by taking Stretch through the defense, but let's start with the back end of that defense, because I imagine Stretch is loaded for bear there.
Well, Stretch, Russell Wilson threw five touchdown passes, really should have been six. Seldom will you see receivers as open as Seattle's were on a regular basis. What grade are you giving this injury decimated Cowboys secondary?
Well, I was listening in right there. I heard your segment. I heard you talking about the injuries. I heard you saying that Ouzier's down, Brown is down. When you are letting guys run buck free wide open, I don't care if you got Willie Foo-Foo out there, could you please get him in position to at least know who you're covering? Before we even start, fellas, it's like I got loaded on my plate. I heard you talking about calories. I got some peas put on my plate. I want them off the plate before we go any farther. So let me start by giving the defensive coordinator, the defensive staff, an F, and it's an F plus. As poorly coordinated defense as I've ever seen. It makes me yearn for the days of wanting Rob Ryan back in here. At least he put 12 out there, try to play some CFL looks every once in a while just to get you okey-doke. Unbelievable how poorly coordinated this defense was. So I hear you, I know you've got – you know, we've talked about injuries, but, guys, when you are letting – and this is the safeties. When you run, when you get a two-man route and you just let, I mean, Woods just stands flat-footed and lets the guy run the post right by him. I don't know how you give those guys any. The fact that I'm even having to grade them makes my rear end itch. An F for the secondary.
All right. Well, let's move on to Jalen Smith's work and Joe Thomas's work. Joe seemed to bring a little bit of a physical presence in there, but obviously not a lot of plays made by the linebackers either.
Yeah, I didn't. I'm starting to get concerned about the money that we've given Jalen. I saw there was a time when they run a little zone read, and he's there to make the play, and he doesn't step in and fill the gap. I think Joe Thomas is a good player. He obviously knows and understands this defensive scheme, and he might be the one guy besides Alden Smith who does understand. And right now that's 2 for 11. I'd say that's about where the Rangers are. But, I mean, the rest of the guys on this defense look lost. They don't fit into the scheme. But I'm going to give the linebackers a C, and that's for the upside of what Joe Thomas did.
You may have heard when you were eavesdropping on us earlier in advance of your segment, I was talking about the defensive line and them not meeting expectations other than Alden Smith, who has 4 sacks, but DeMarcus Lawrence, Everson Griffin, Tristan Hill, Donatari Poe. What are you seeing overall?
Well, up front, guys, I see guys that are uncomfortable in the scheme. I think DeMarcus Lawrence might be a little nicked up, but he is uncomfortable with what they're asking him to do. I see the same thing out of Everson Griffin. Now, Alden Smith has obviously played from a two-point. He's long. He understands leverage. He gets engaged, and then he can shake and move, and he can do some things, and you see him do that. The guys up front, I think Tristan Hill has gotten a little better. I've been openly critical of him, but, up front-wise, this is a scheme, guys, that I am really concerned about. And I mean, I'm really concerned about it. This almost feels like 2 years ago when Paul Alexander brought in a complete different blocking technique than this offensive line had ever played. And that's what it feels like here. It feels like that this scheme, there are so many guys confused. There are guys that are thinking and not playing. And anytime you're doing that defensively, you're getting beat. And right now, guys, I'm just telling you, this is as poorly coordinated defense as I've ever seen from the Cowboys. And that's painful and hard to say, but it is. I mean, I go back last week, and it's just like week after week right here. It feels like preseason football, guys, and they don't know what – I don't think they know the responsibilities. I don't know what they're being asked to do. I mean, at best, I'm giving the defensive line a C, and that goes to Alden Smith. I mean, he's done a hell of a job and understands what they're asking him to do. But, fellas, we got issues on the defensive side of the football. If you score 31 in this league and you can't win, it's a problem. And, I mean, it's a real problem.
Well, to your point, Mike Nolan hasn't coordinated a defense in 6 years. He's worked on defensive staffs, but he has not been in charge of a defense in 6 years. And to your point about the players not fitting the scheme and not being comfortable, I mean, we heard Everson Griffin and DeMarcus Lawrence this week say they don't like playing out of a two-point stance. They're going to put their hand on the ground and rush the passer. So I thought maybe we'd see something different from them today, and I don't think we did.
And that's – I mean, you make a true statement. I mean, when those guys are telling you, I'm paid to rush the quarterback – And they're not getting that opportunity. I'm not real sure. You know, I know George Edwards come in here as a senior defensive assistant, but guys, I'm going to go on record and say I think that you're going to see some shakeup here, and I think it needs to happen really quick. I really do believe that you could see some shakeup of responsibilities, maybe even as soon as this next week.
Now, I wonder if they'll be announced, because Mike McCarthy, it turns out, is much more secretive than I knew him to be when he was in Green Bay.
He hadn't given you the password to the honeycomb hideout yet, Ed. I'm kind of surprised.
Let's. I'll turn it over to Matt. He'll question you on the offense.
Yeah, and one last thing on that. Thank you, Ed. you actually believe, Stretch, that maybe the change, do you believe it would be a different person calling the defensive plays? Or are you just saying they would divvy up their responsibilities among the defensive coaches? What do you – I mean, this sounds pretty drastic, although that did look pretty drastic today.
Well, I think – I mean, Mike Nolan's a secondary guy. You've got a very inexperienced group of coaches in the secondary. Might he make that more of his priority? Now I'm totally speculating here, guys, but I do think this.
That's allowed on podcasts.
Yeah, I do. Thank you for giving me the password, Ed. What is it, OU812? Is that the password, since you're talking about the menu there, to do drop in, or Fred's beds that you're staying there? Seattle, I appreciate that. I think that I just think you're going to see a shifting of responsibilities, guys. I you know, week after week, when you come up with what feels like just a poorly coordinated effort, I find it hard to really swallow the fact that they're going to go into the meeting tomorrow, look at the same thing that they look at last week, and if they're realistic with themselves, this is an 0-3 football team. I mean, I realize they won a game, but when you're leaving guys scot-free, guys are running through the secondary, you act as if you have never seen a bunch look down there on the goal line or don't know how to pass that off.
Yeah.
I mean, guys, that's really concerning to me.
All right, let's look at the offense real quick, and let's start with the quarterback. I mean, he's putting up record-breaking numbers, but he also made some critical mistakes in this game. How would you grade Dak Prescott?
Well, I saw some things in this game that I hadn't seen in the first two games. I saw kind of that West Coast scheme come into it. They ran a shallow cross early in the game, third and six. They ran a shallow to Cooper, which in the West Coast offense, you've always got a shallow coming from somewhere so that you've got the ball to get rid of in a hot situation. I saw Dak stick that ball right on him and get a first down. To me, I was thinking, okay, Dak is becoming more comfortable in this offense. He still does some things, fellas, I'm going to tell you, that concern me. And I again, they run a seven pump. Now, that's a corner that turns into a skinny post. And he hit, I believe it was Cooper, to the 5-yard line. It should have been a touchdown. I mean, it was – I'm watching the secondary of Seattle. They were not going to allow Zeke to beat them. They were in a bare front, which means they're covering your center and both guards, and they brought Jamal Adams down, and they said, one thing is not happening in this game. You're not going to run – you're not going to run Zeke, and you're not going to throw a screen. And they stopped that. However, outside, they were playing outside leverage, Flowers in the other corner. So, I mean, the middle of the field was wide open all game. And there were some things – and, guys, I'm probably going to take a beating for this, but I know he threw for 450 yards, but he should have. I mean, they guys running – you know, they were not contesting what was going on here. So – I gave him a B+, but I mean, you know, that's only because he threw for 450 yards, and I think he still does some things with his legs that extend plays and keep plays alive. But he's going to have to continue to grow in this offense, because guess what, fellas? I mean, if they're going to win 8-9 games and win the NFC East, they're going to have to score 35 a game, and they've proven they can do that. So maybe they'll continue to get better there.
Running back, we'll agree. I mean, you know, he's always solid, although he just didn't have as busy a day as we've grown accustomed to. So would a B be appropriate with Zeke?
Yeah, and that's because of pass protection, Matt. You know, that's because of the job he does from a protection standpoint. So, yes, I would have given him a B in this game. You're starting to read my mind a little bit.
Okay, that's scary. The offensive line reconfigured on the fly. They got Terrence Steele off the field, and they got Zach Martin out at right tackle. Did you kind of like the move, and how did it – did you feel like it paid off?
Well, I do like the move. They brought the kid in from Wisconsin. Help me pronounce his name, Ed.
Biadasz.
God bless you to you, Mosley. I said, Ed, can you give it to me one time?
Biotis.
All right. Good. God bless you to both of you. I thought he played pretty well in the game, and I thought they became comfortable with moving Looney to guard, who, you know, he's comfortable in that position. Zach Martin does a great job wherever he is. He's such a big and physical player. I thought it looked like they were kind of onto something there. Now, it was unfortunate that they were so – you know, they were 15 down in the game when that happened, because when Jamal went out, they started playing cover two and way back, and that would have been a situation where I believe Zeke would have really gashed them running the football. Unfortunately, they were so far behind in the game that they were having to throw it there. So overall, I gave the offensive line, I gave them a B. It concerned me a little bit that they gave up that sack on that three-man pressure. But when you have guys that are new to one whole side of the line, and the communication of that could have easily broken down there. But I think this offensive line, once they get Tyron back in there, guys, they're going to be very formidable. And I think we could look for possibly, you know, maybe until Collins can come back, maybe they stay with, you know, the young man from Wisconsin. I can't pronounce his name with my Texas accent, but maybe they keep him in there.
Well, that would be really interesting if that was the case.
I gave them a B.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Okay, B, Ed. Okay, and then wide receivers and tight end, I would say Sed Wilson, welcome to the party. You talk about those crossers, all those shallow, you know, getting guys on the move.
Catch and run.
My man Sed was taking it to the house on these guys.
Yeah, you know, he looked good. Noah Brown did some things. I mean, this is a receiving core, guys. That's really good. I mean, they block on the perimeter. I gave this group an A. I thought they played a great game. I mean, Gallup. This is a group you're going to have to contend with all year. And so I with the addition of those five guys, they're deep. I think Schultz continues to get a little better. He gets a good feel. I mean, he's adequate. Blocking the end man on the line of scrimmage. So I thought it was an A effort from the receivers.
That was a big miss, by the way, on that Blake Bell, the belldozer himself. You got to hit that ball. I mean, he's right there, and it's a big situation, a big opportunity for them. Okay, last but not least, special teams. In the past, you've been very, very critical. We thought that this John Fossil getting going a different direction with this thing. What a mess. Two missed extra points. The thing down there with a Pollard. I mean, it's some embarrassment again on the special teams.
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, they paid that guy $1.5 million to come in here. And last week he looked like he was, he was ready to drink the wine. And this week he's back stomping the grapes with some of the stuff that they're doing. They had a blocked extra point. They missed an extra point. The fumble down there trying to bring the football out. I mean, at best, I'm giving the special teams a D, and it's a borderline D at that.
All right. You can see Stretch every Sunday night with Del Hansen. Del Hansen Sports Special, WFAA Channel 8. If you live in the Dallas area, if you live elsewhere, you can find it on the app and all those places. Stretch, have a tremendous evening, and we appreciate you being with us.
Hey, Matt, I appreciate it too. Pull that hat down a little bit. Looks like you're coming out of shoot number four on a bull named Fu Manchu. Pull it down on them glasses and let it rip one time.
I'll do it.
See, man.
Okay.
Thanks, bud.
Hey, guys.
Stretch is now leaving the Zoom meeting. There he goes in a really nice golf shirt tonight. Stretch, you don't have to get so dressed up for the podcast, but we do appreciate it. All right, there he goes. Ed, I mean, we've hit on a lot of different areas. You're a man of a lot of notes. You like to amass a lot of notes. You like to talk to a lot of your folks out there. Any kind of parting thoughts you want to make about this loss as the Cowboys fall to 1-2? I guess the best news is the Browns and the Giants are coming to AT&T Stadium. So that will be a sight for sore eyes, although the Browns, you never know. Never know with the Browns.
Well, I think the Browns, I mean, who would have guessed that in week four, the Cowboys would play the Browns. One would have a winning record, one wouldn't. And it would be the Browns with the winning record because they'd gone 90 consecutive NFL weeks without being over 500, which was by far the longest streak in the entire NFL. And they're going to be a problem. I mean, Baker Mayfield and Odell Beckham Jr. and Jarvis Landry, I mean, they represent vast potential in terms of yards and points against a bad defense. And Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt running the football, I mean, they're going to be tough. And they got Myles Garrett rushing the passer. So this won't be any kind of layup game for Dallas either. I think the salvation for the Cowboys, I think you can live with losing to the Rams and the Seahawks on the road. You know, two teams that have established themselves as postseason contenders on a regular basis now. You're not surprised to lose both of those games, even though I give McCarthy credit for saying this week, hey, we need to go on the road and beat a good team. We need to take that step, and they didn't do it. And they had a chance because they were up against a bad defense, and they were playing Seattle with no people in the stands. It doesn't get better than that coming to Seattle. They're fortunate, I think, that the NFC East is now, what, 2-9-1 through 3 weeks. Mm. That's a combined winning percentage of 0.208, the second worst through 3 weeks for a single division since the NFL went to eight divisions 18 years ago. 18 years ago. So the Cowboys are fortunate that they play in such a horrible division. Now, they played in this division and it wasn't good last year, and they could have gone 8-8 and won it, and they didn't. So not saying it's going to be easy for them to do, but they're fortunate that they're not in a division with some better competition. You know, yeah, if they had won today, they would have had twice as many wins as the rest of the division combined. So yeah. they lost a great chance to kind of take command of the division early on.
Yeah, the Eagles are just going to try to kind of tie out this season. Just keep playing for ties. I like somebody had the line. They said the Eagles punted for a tie. I like that. This is a it's a rough scene, Ed, and Cowboys fall to 1-2. Hey, people forget some of the members of this new staff. I wanted to make sure I had this right. Ed, Maurice Linguist. The Linguist, a man who knows many languages. I don't know if he does or not. The secondary coach for the Cowboys. Ed, as you kind of make your way around the field before these games, or I don't know what you're allowed to do.
I don't. I can't go on the field anymore.
Where do you do your pregame reports for? Do you get up in the stands?
Yeah, we're kind of above the field now.
Right above the field.
Yeah. But there's no going down on the field, and there's no going in locker rooms during – what?
Can you shout at people
from where
you are?
Yeah, I mean, when guys are, you know, running laps or whatever pregame, going through their whatever they do, I can have some conversation with them. But it's not like I could if I was on the field standing next to them.
Yes. Well,
it's a different year, buddy. It's a different year. We're just trying to make it.
Tell me about it. But the Doomsday Podcast has found a way. And the Zoom technology that's been accessible to us, I've really enjoyed it, Ed, and being able to see you and see you react and in awe of some of the points I make and some of the things I say. It's been great. Ed, do you have some, other than the fact that this is a horrific division, if you were going to have any level of optimism that the Cowboys could get this thing cranked up, what would you base that on? Because there doesn't seem to be any reinforcements coming on defense. In offense, obviously, they're putting up points even with missing two starters on the offensive line. They are getting reinforcements there. Is that the whole plan from here on out? Is like you got to score like 35 a game basically to win?
I think you have two choices. You have the choice that Mike McCarthy made this week, which was let's just try and outscore them. That's one way to approach it when you have a bad defense. That's what Seattle's doing right now, and they're doing it well because their quarterback doesn't turn the football over, and he makes incredible throws. But the other choice is to feature Elliott and try to control the score, right, and not let teams have an incredible number of possessions to score against your defense. You protect your defense with your running game. That's actually – remember, that's why they drafted Ezekiel Elliott. They had a bad defense, and they needed to control the score. They needed to, you know, have 30 minutes, time of possession. That was the magic number. If we can have the ball for longer than our opponents, our defense can stay fresh. They won't get worn down, and we'll wear the opponent down, and we'll win the game that way. Those are their two choices. Yeah, other than, I guess, doing what Stretch recommended or thought possible, and making changes on the coaching staff in the middle of the season. And he referred to the offensive line, and they did that a few years ago. That's when they got rid of Paul Alexander halfway through the season at the bye week, and they brought in Hudson Houck to oversee as an advisor, promoted Mark Colombo to offensive line coach. So that's the kind of thing he's talking about if they go in that direction.
Let me make one last point on this quarterback. That, again, we've both admired and had on this very podcast. But, Ed, let me just say this. He, you know, part of these huge numbers, guess why it's happening? Well, because he is participating in putting them in bad spots where they have to come racing back and to make all these plays. So, I mean, I just think it needs to be mentioned that part of the reason he sort of has pulled off some of these heroics, they're down, they look up, and they're down 30-15. They got no other choice. Boom, 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 go down. Right. So you have to admire him for being able to do that, but you also have to say, you know, the fumble, the first half interception, late in the first half, the timing of all this, like, he's creating, which reminds us of another quarterback. Romo had a lot of comebacks. Romo had, at one point, he was the comeback kid, much like Stafford. But he had this way of putting himself sometimes in that spot where he had to then overcome the adversity that he had caused.
Right, but I don't think Dak is that way. I think Dak inherently protects the football. He didn't do it today. You know, one situation, he gets blindsided and the ball gets knocked out as he's trying to throw it. That's not all his fault, but like I said before, it's his responsibility. And then the play at the end, he really should have been sacked. It was unfortunate for the Cowboys and for him that he kept his balance somehow and was able to get a throw into the end zone on third down, and it got picked off. But the bigger culprit there was the Seahawks only rushed three, and they got immediate pressure with the three-man rush and almost took him down. He had the strength and the balance to get out of it, create a second opportunity, you know, and threw into coverage and got picked, and that was the end of the game. But I think Dak ordinarily is mindful of putting the ball at risk, and he doesn't put the rest of the team in jeopardy in the way, you know, that Tony did many times in his career. And, yeah, he had a bad game in that regard today, for sure. Ultimately, that decided the outcome of the game. Dak's three turnovers were the difference in the game.
Yes, as you tweeted and now you have said on the Doomsday podcast. Ed, thank you for being there in Seattle representing ESPN as well as the Doomsday podcast. It's still early there, still relatively early. I wonder if the seafood market is – that's kind of a public place that a lot of people like to hang out. It's not a great COVID situation. Do we know if the market is open?
I do know that the market is open, but not this time of night.
Oh, not this time of night. Have you ever seen them throw the flying fish or whatever?
I have been in the market. I've witnessed that. I've eaten an outstanding halibut sandwich down there, and I wish I could have had one this time, but it was not to be.
But at least you're at a hotel that
I'm at a hotel
serves
that has
food.
Yes. And next week, I will be at Jerry World for Baker Mayfield. And guess what it's going to be? That matchup we've looked forward to for so many years. Odell Beckham Jr. and Brandon Carr. Brandon Carr victimized by Odell Beckham Jr. One of the greatest catches in the history of football.
We got to revisit that. Everybody will be asked about that. You'll probably have to do a feature on it. And
that's my final thought.
We'll all gather. Ed, really appreciate it. I think appreciate the good folks at Vocal. Shout out to Frito.
Speaking of comebacks, how about Frito's comeback?
He's been talking to folks, and I think he was like doing some, maybe attended a Zoom Sunday school class today. So he's doing better. He's doing a lot better, And he is on the comeback. And Frito, we love you. We think about you all the time. And we've been in good hands, but they're just delivering us so they could turn it back over to you. Appreciate you, buddy. And Ed and I have continued on down this path, and Ed continues to show great patience at all times, like he always does.
We want to thank our producer, Jay.
Oh, yeah, Jay. Jay does a great job for vocal. Yeah. Jay Gillespie, and tremendous guy from TCU, although he's smarting, Ed, because TCU, they lost to the Cyclones, had a bad loss the other day. So thank you, Jay. Thank you, Vocal, and what a great group that is. And thank you, Ed. Okay, now Ed, if you would say goodnight to all the members of Doomsday Nation.
Good night, Doomsday Nation. See you after the fiasco at Jerry World next week.
As the Cowboys will prepare to fall to 1-3. No, they're going to get it back to 500. Thanks for everybody. Thanks for our Doomsday family. We appreciate you guys. And thanks for making this thing what it is. And we will talk to you next week. From Dallas, Texas, I'm Matt Mosley for Ed Werder saying good night.